Welcome back to the Unending TBR podcast. This is your host, Nicole, and I hope you're feeling adventurous today because this author interview, she's not only just an author, she's also been a ghostwriter and is a cover designer, graphic designer. I'm so excited for you to hear about this conversation. Thank you for joining. So I am so happy to welcome to the podcast this week, Emily Haney. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And I have a few questions because I feel like you have such a unique writing story and your part in the community. Can you tell us how your writing journey began and some of the books that you've written?
Sure. I'll try to make it different because I have shared it on some podcasts, but it goes back to when I was just a young girl. I'm an only child, and I think that only helped me just foster my imagination. I just had scores of stuffed animals and Barbies and just lots of time. And that kind of maybe makes me sound sad, but I really think it was a good thing. So I would spend a lot of time creating these worlds for my stuffed animals. I mean, we're taking it back here, but, and I had my best friend who is still my best friend. We would, exchange stories. We would get together. We would come up with what's the backstory basically. Yeah. And then we would be tired because we'd be like, well, that was it. We figured out their entire life story and now we don't want to play it. So I think that started me on this journey of just really appreciating story and how that really affects us as people. I listened to a lot of audiobooks as a kid and at that time they were book on tape. And my mom and my dad both read to me almost every night and on long car rides and things like that. So there was just this constant audio type of learning in addition to reading as well. And that's probably is why I love audiobooks today because I just can't get enough of them. but from that, I don't know exactly when. I remember in seventh and eighth grade, I think that was about when Harry Potter hit and I was just a huge fan. And so I started writing as well. Just anything for your English class type of thing. Then about in high school is where my senior year, I decided to write, I wanted to write a novel for my senior project. That was my big idea. And I'd had all these crazy ideas, you know, and then they told me I really couldn't do it because they thought it was too big of a project. And I'm a little stubborn. And so I was like, well, fine, how about a novella, you know, something a little shorter. And that actually ended up being a retelling of the story of Ruth from the Bible into modern times. Yeah, it was just a sweet romance, basically. Yeah. And you know, it was so fun. And I mean, a little tidbit here, if I can like expand a little,
Absolutely.
I remember them agreeing, okay, you know, you can do this novella and then coming home after school and being like, oh my goodness, I have no ideas. Like all of a sudden, everything I had, no inspiration, nothing. I'd fought this fight, you know, and then there was nothing there. And I remember specifically praying and just asking for a story. And that's when the Lord gave me the Ruth story. So that has yet to see the light of day, which is ironic because I have titled it The Light of Dawn. But we'll see. Someday maybe I'll revise it. It needs it. but that was my first. I dipped my toes into it because I wrote the book. I had a mentor in my hometown who had written before. I don't think she was really published, but she was willing to help me. And I submitted it to Bethany House. Like, I mean, it was a whole thing. You're faxing it in at this point, you know, and I got a beautiful form rejection letter, which I totally deserved. but that kind of was really the beginning. I would say that was the impetus to continue because then I started doing NaNoWriMo every year and I would write a new story every year. I won it several years in a row and I was like really excited. And then things kind of slowed down with work and life and all that happens. And then finally in 2012 is when I committed. I said, you know what? I can continue to write stories every year and let them sit and do nothing with them, or I can figure out this publishing thing. And so I went to ACFW, American Christian Fiction Writers Conference for the first time. I also became their photographer. It was a weird story, but from then on, I started to figure out, okay, so this is how you get something published. You polish it, you find a critique group or a critique friend, you submit to an agent, you know, all of those different things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, it's a little bit of a long story, but that's kind of the journey there. And then from that, I just this year released my first official book with Sunrise Publishing called Expired Promise. And that's a romantic suspense under the Emily Haney name. And then before that, actually, I guess it was 2016, I started my journey as a as Belle Renshaw, which is another name I write under for my sweet romance. And that's just a Christmas series, basically. Every Christmas, I would release a book, and there's five of those out. It's now complete. So I did start before. I wanted to experience, you know, I wanted my books out there, and I didn't want to wait. But I also didn't know that I was ready to put it out under my name. Now everybody knows, but before they didn't. So
yeah,
I think that brings us to about current.
I remember kind of like the mystique of Miss Belle Renshaw.
Yeah, who is this? Got a lot of similar photo style, and you know, I think some people knew. I did tell a few people just so I could get some promotion out there, but.
Yeah.
But it was more really it was a little bit of a protection for myself too, just because I mean, self-publishing has come a huge like strides and strides forward, and it's much less of a kind of game over situation. If you do really badly, you can still come back from it. But at the time, I didn't know. So I decided it was better to put it under a pen name.
I did not think of that as the reason for a pen name, but that makes a lot of sense, especially like early on in your career.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really smart.
Yeah. Well, and it also gave me this like anonymity that was really fun. And I wasn't putting them out there to make a ton of money. Honestly, I was putting them out there. My first book I wrote, it's called One Christmas in Winter. And I wrote it for my dad. We love to watch Hallmark movies at Christmas time together. And I just wanted to give him a book for Christmas. So I was like, well, why not publish it?
The majority of that work is already done. Although publishing is a whole nother job.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I design covers. I could do it. Right. So I just went for it.
Oh, I love that. I love hearing that. That's really interesting. So you have also been a ghostwriter, correct? Can you share a little bit of like your experience with that?
So it does kind of overlap with all of this. This was back probably maybe 2010 or so, I think. I was living in Northern Los Angeles, and it's expensive there. It's expensive anywhere these days, but it was especially expensive for a single woman. I had some great roommates, and I was working like three different jobs, and things were kind of crazy. So I switched to like one job, and I had some free time still, and I'm not one to just sit around. So I decided to look into ways that I could make money on the side. I've done, you know, had my own photography business, but that's kind of seasonal in some ways, and weddings, I wasn't pushing really hard for that. So I found at the time it was called freelance.com or Elance, something like that. It's been a while. It's totally changed names now, but it was basically a way to, for people to put projects out saying, hey, we need somebody to write this, or we need somebody to edit this or revise this, etc. And I was like, well, you know, what are the things I'm good at? And then what do I think I could do? And I wasn't really sure if I could be a good writer, but I decided to try it. So I took on some crazy projects. I wrote scripts for the intros to a YouTube like channel where they were playing music. And because I'm a musician as well, I was able to like describe the type of music that was going to be played. And so that kind of like worked well. I wrote descriptions for Etsy listings. I did like medical blogs, travel blogs, all these different random things. And it got a little like kind of bogged down. I felt bogged down, I guess, because it was short stuff and it wasn't super fun. And it was for like pennies, you know, you're not making much. So I was like, well, what about fiction? Because I love to create stuff. So on a website like that, there tends to be, because of the push, and I understand the draw of more intense romance. I did not want to write that. So I ended up searching, that was like a kind of like clean, clean romance, that type of thing. And so there's a lot of Amish fiction, a lot of cozy, or excuse me, yes, cozy mysteries, but more so at the time it was mail order bride. So I got in with several different clients and they would hire me to write them mail order bride romances or contemporary romance, et cetera, that type of thing. And I just made sure that I was very discerning in who I agreed to work with and made sure that it was clean and I could get away with not adding anything intense in there. And I just wrote probably hundreds of stories for these people. Like you talk about like getting your 10,000 hours in. I did that. One year I wrote 1,000,000 words. And, I was trying to pay for rent and food and things like that. And that was just a skill that I had at the time. So it trained me to write quickly. It trained me to really understand what plot means, because you can't just, okay, so you've got a guy in the West and a girl from the East, that's your basis and you have to stick with that mostly. So it's like, how did I make it fun? And for me, I wanted to make it something that I enjoyed writing. You don't pour your heart and soul into it necessarily just because it's not your own book, but you do a good job. And so I just, I practiced and practiced, right? That type of thing. So that was kind of how I jumped into it. That is not everyone's ghostwriting story for sure, but it was just a way that I could, I knew at that time, and I've slowed down a little bit just because I've got a lot of stuff on my plate, but I knew I could write, if it's like, if I do 15 minute sprints and I can write 700 to 800 words every sprint, you just do the math, right? And so you're like, I can write this book in 2 weeks type of thing. If I write 3,700 words a day, 10 days, done, that type of thing. If it's usually a little shorter, between 45 and 50,000 words. So it really became a game of math, which I don't like, but mostly of the words at that point. And it worked, just lots of writing.
That is really, now I'm like trying to think of like, man, when I was in the 2016 time of where I was like reading tons of mail order, because it was like a whole trend. There was like
really
so
was.
Mail order brides. And I'm like, I wonder how many I read of yours.
I know, who knows? And they are all under different names. And obviously, I don't even know most of them. There is one client that by the end, because I've really tried to stop ghostwriting now just because I really want to focus on my own writing. And there was one client that I continued to work for up until the end, if you can call it that, who is really great. And I actually found out who I was, and I can't divulge it, of course, because of the non-disclosure, but I mean, she's international best-selling, author. And I'm like, man. So as like a side note to this, just because it is a question that I got rather frequently, was like, well, why would you do this? Why would you write for all these other people when you could write for yourself? And it is hard. It is hard to see that and be like, I can never really truly claim that as my own credit, even though I wrote all these books. But basically, when you think about writing as a business and you think about it as like making a living at it, you have to sacrifice sometimes, because your own personal writing, I mean, I could have spent years and years and years just perfecting one story or multiple stories, waiting on the industry, things like that. And I have done that, but at the time I needed to eat food. You should be able to like pay for the roof over my head. And so you kind of make those sacrifices. But as I said, it came to a point where I was like, okay, I'm tired of pouring my heart into all these other books and not having them be mine. And so I've shifted gears towards more focus on myself, and my design business has allowed me to do that. But it's a little crazy.
I bet. I know. It's like all these hats that you wear. That is just like something that I find so fascinating. What do you feel are some really big misconceptions or myths about like ghostwriting?
Probably the first one that comes to mind, and I don't know if this is accurate for everybody who hears the term ghostwriter, but I think a lot of people maybe think of, and I don't know why he comes to mind first, but like Tim Tebow, like he wrote a book, he had a ghostwriter, I mean, or maybe he has like a a co-writer, but it's really a ghostwriter. And you think, man, ghostwriters must make a lot of money. And that is, that can be true. I mean, nowadays, like talking with my agent, she's given me a number that I would need to charge just based on all the things and what she knows. And it's drastically higher than anything I ever charged before. And that's just because of my time, my commitment, what kind of project I would take on now, which would have to be something that would be, and I hate to say it like this, but like worth my time, right? Because as you said, there's a lot of hats I wear.
And it's like the skill level that you have had writing for all of this, you've had the success you've had. I mean, that practice, you can't buy that practice.
Right. Like, and really. So, yeah, so that's something, but it's not, I would say probably, maybe not most, but a good majority of ghostwriters these days, if they were in a situation like I was, are not making that much, quite honestly. Now, it just depends, right? It depends on who your client is, who you're working for, what kind of books you're writing. Like I said, I wrote short novels, and that was because that was what the market wanted. Like that's what readers wanted, especially now with like cozy mysteries kind of taking over that mail order bride. And so that takes the focus of those short, fast reads that people just devour. So those things, you can't, you know, you can charge some, but you have to also think of like, what is your client going to make off of it? That type of thing. And another question I was asked frequently too was like, how you feel with seeing, like kind of giving your own ideas away in a sense, right? Because most people, not most, but some people are hiring writers like me to kind of just farm out, I guess you could say, their books, and then they put them under their own pen name. And I'm sure there are actually many, I don't know how many, but people that we read that may have books written by a ghostwriter and you would never know because of those non-disclosure agreements. So that does feel a little fuzzy in that kind of gray area. And so I think the misconception there might be that, I don't even know how to phrase it, but that, you know, maybe it's a little disingenuous. But again, you're being paid for your work. It's a job. It's, I don't know how to put it, but like I became okay with it myself, I guess, just because I had to, you know, I had to make the money.
it's different because it is an art form. So it's kind of like you're selling it. For somebody else to sell it under their name. It's just a real, it's an interesting
it dynamic. Is.
Yeah.
And I don't love it necessarily, especially now being an author and you're thinking, well, am I competing against other people who have just hired someone else to write their book, which I'm sure it's not that many people, but maybe in some of our most beloved best-selling authors who write, and you're wondering, how do they write so many books? You kind of have to wonder. I don't know. I sometimes wonder, is it a ghostwriter? I don't know. I don't know if I can think of many more misconceptions necessarily, but I guess... go ahead.
Would you handle then the whole editing process, or once you kind of do your part, I don't know how many revisions go through, would you do like all of the revisions and everything too, or do you hand it off?
That's usually a great question. Actually what I was going to say kind of fits in with that, because for me, I preferred to be the one to come up with the plot, to come up with the idea. I could be given an idea, maybe like, you know, she's from this town, he's from this state or whatever. But then I like to be able to just kind of flow with it, because it was a lot harder to kind of fit someone else's story into my brain. And so along with that, I noticed, especially the clients that I stayed with the longest, they started to just let me do my thing. And so they're like, we want another series, 12 books, do it, you know, in a nice kind way. And I was like, okay, you know, I know what I'll get paid. Sounds good. And for me, and this, I don't know if this was everyone's experience on this app, but like the freelance site, et cetera. But I wrote the book and turned it in, and I can't tell you, I don't know if I ever had to revise anything, quite honestly. Wow. And I don't say that like arrogantly. I never had to have to deal with that. Now, I know that they're like the clients that I worked with the longest, because I got to know them. they had an editor that was someone that they always worked with, and that person was the one who would always go over my books so that that pen name I was writing under stayed consistent. So it was always my writing. It was always that editor. And they said that they never really had to change much. It was like little things, you know, your typos that you get. So my process would be, and I am not maybe proud to say this, but I could write the book. I'd read it once and I'd turn it in. So, because at that point, you just need to, like, you know, minimize your time on this project so that it's more worth the payment that you're getting. Now, there were some clients I had like auditioned for that requested, you know, proofed, you know, perfect quality. And at that point, when you're looking at that price point, it's not worth it. It's not worth it for me to like have that extra stress of, oh, I've got to have like who I'm not a good proofer. Like I'm not, that's not my job. So I don't want to have to go out to find somebody and pay them to then make pennies on the word. So I tended to stick with the clients who most frequently just said, we just want you to write the book and we'll take care of the editing. And it seemed to work out. So
that's really cool. Now that's, I find that very, very interesting because it's so, it's such like a foggy thing, you know,
you can't
come out and say it, but it happens. And I heard just like this year about how like so many of the celebrity biography or autobiographies are ghostwritten, and it's
So, well, it's kind of funny too. I mean, I love the true crime, Crime Junkies, which is like a true crime podcast. And Ashley Flowers, you know, her book came out and I was like, oh, I mean, I audiobooked it. It was great. And then only recently did I realize she had a co-writer. Her name is not on the cover. And that's part of something that's written into their contract. And I understand why. I mean, goodness, Ashley Flowers is doing amazing things. She's doing so many things. And so like, I totally get it. But it's interesting, right? It's a ghostwriter is very similar in that, although you don't have to disclose them. I think that that's something to consider too, when you're thinking like, oh, do I want to ghostwrite or, oh, do I want to co-write? Those are very different things, you know, and with this co-writer, she didn't get her name on the cover, but they are promoting it together, which sounds a little more like a ghostwriter, but they're saying that it's co-written. So, but like with a ghostwritten book, it'll just be like, you know, your name on the front and that's it. So it's an interesting little tidbit there.
Kind of like a half ghost.
It's like, but it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, that really is. Okay, so now you also, one of your other hats is cover design. How did that, is that part of like all tied into your love of photography and stuff like that? How did that come about?
You know, the strange but true answer to this is I don't remember. That sounds so bad, but it's true. I remember vaguely. So when I was working in Northern LA, Southern California, I was working for a church, and that was like kind of became my main job. And in the necessity of that role, we didn't have a graphic designer on staff, and the previous woman whose job I had, you know, stepped into, she had just done it all herself and just kind of learned. And so we had all the, like the Adobe products and everything. And so I just started to have fun. Like I am for sure self-taught. I'm pretty sure I do things maybe the hard way, but I get it done. Right. So that kind of just taught me, you know, creating stuff for like our women's ministry or for the slides at, you know, on Sunday mornings, those type of things. And from that, I thought, well, why not marry my love of books and writing with, design? And I don't remember exactly when. It was more than likely, gosh, I don't even know if I remember, maybe after 2012 or 2013, somewhere around in there, I think I just started, I don't even know how I got my first client. I just started designing. I think I just created a website and created some mock covers and I worked with a very small press that I don't think is around anymore, and they wanted a cover. And so I did it. And I enjoyed it, but I started to think more about, what's going to make this cover marketable, and B, how can they stand out, I guess, from the trends? Because I think what I found most people wanted me to do was to replicate their idea, which is great. And I understand that, but you have to step into, obviously, like you said, with photography, I have a designer's eye, I guess you could say. And so
yeah.
I had to trust that instead of maybe letting my clients influence me to add more and add, and she needs to be holding this and, you know, this type of thing. And I'm like, I'll do it, but it's not going to look right. So, yeah. So I think that just came, it came more to that. And I do remember though, very specifically, this might jump us ahead a little, but so 2020, I created a cover, and I had been designing up until that point just for independent clients. And I created a cover for Suspended in the Stars, which was my, I was blogging a book in a month, and it was just a fun, I'm just going to create this so it has a cover, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to stick with it. And from that cover, a friend of mine who is connected with Enclave shared it with them, with the publisher, with Steve. And that was what they needed to see in order to want to hire me to try their first cover, which was Secrets in the Mist for Morgan Bussey. Yeah. So it was just this thing of like, that's what we needed to see, that you have kind of, I guess you could say, the chops in a sense to do this. And I mean, I'm like forever grateful for them for giving me the opportunity, because I mean, goodness, when you look at Kirk DuPont and his amazingness and all of his amazing covers, I'm like, I don't know that I belong there next to him, but I just do my best to provide as, you know, marketable and eye-catching of a cover as professional as I can make it.
I remember seeing, because I was remember watching other bookstagrammers and they were reading Suspended in the Stars, and I'm like, I'm gonna get to that, and then I like never got to it, but I remembered that cover and I was like following along how you were doing that, and like that was such like an eye-catching, unique cover. Now talking, what do you feel is like a trend? Because I mean, there's so many different, I mean, they're very visual, and like how you said, it's like, man, there feel like there's a lot of like recreating. What do you predict that a cover trend that's going to come out of that, or at least elements that you feel are going to be more present? And what do you think is going to be something that has been used up and is going to die out?
This is so hard. Because I feel like I'm better at maybe not better, but I feel like my strength might be knowing what's not going to stay in fashion versus kind of guessing what will be next, which I would love to be able to do that. But I think if we're talking romance, I would assume that the I call them vector covers, because it's like you're using vectors to create the people, but the illustrated covers, I guess that those will probably fall out of style in a few years. I think they're still really hot right now. They're super cute. I really like them, but everybody is going in that direction. And I think that that tends to get saturated and, you know, we'll want to look for the next thing. So that's something that I've been seeing. I think when my like strength, I guess, would probably be more like young adult or like science fiction and fantasy. And I think for that, we're seeing a lot of also illustrated covers there in a different way. They're more artistic, not such a flat design. And I love them. They're so beautiful. And like, I do love them.
Well, and I also feel like Enclave 2 has had so many where it's like each one is so different. They're very vibrant colors. Like any like bookstagrammer is like, oh my goodness, I just want this almost because it's so eye-catching in those vibrant, bold colors. I love that about them, and how they've done, like they don't have like a form that's just filled out. Like every cover seems so different. I don't know exactly how to describe it, and I feel like they're doing really good with that. Maybe that's the genre of fantasy sci-fi. I'm not sure, but
I think it does lend itself to the genre a little bit. I mean, you've got it's funny because like I would say my strength is not people. It just in sense of like I. First of all, I don't prefer people on my covers, which is ironic because of my cover. But in general, I tend to love like an iconic thing, like an item or a setting or a scene or something, or even the typography, like that's your focus. And I really do still love that. But I think like I think that's something where you got to get a mix of it. Like Kirk is really great with people on the cover. And so I think that's where, you know, Enclave is wise, and they have multiple designers doing things. And so they all, you want to make sure that it's a cover that Enclave would publish, you know, when you're creating something. But at the same time, you also want that diversity. So it doesn't start to feel, because I know my covers have a feeling. I know Kirk's covers. I can almost always spot a Kirk cover, not because of anything he like, you know, it's not a negative thing. It's more of a, like, I just, style is very
specific. It's like any artist, right? Mm-hmm. Every artist has their style. Just every writer has their style. You can sometimes pick it out.
So I don't know. I'm not going to say that I'm going to be able to predict anything, unfortunately, but I do love, I mean, that's something that I do very frequently, is just like look through, whether that's the Chirp sales, the audiobook sales, I always look at their covers there. Whether that's like I get some Bookstagram tours, and I always look through just to see mm-hmm. what covers are happening. Yeah. And so I do think we're headed in that direction of a more illustrated. It does get a little more specific to maybe a scene or a feeling of that book. Mm-hmm. But then as a random general market example, you've got Fourth Wing, which is really popular, and it's very simple. It's just that gold background, really nice detailing, but it's simple. And I like that too. I tend to like sometimes more simple than more complex. I would say like mm-hmm. Oathbound is a good example, like that series. It's powerful because it's got that punch of color, but it's also a very simple cover. Like I didn't do anything super amazing.
It's not busy. It's not huge scenes or anything like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's true. I know. I'm kind of like wondering, and I'm not the first Bookstagrammer to have like pointed out that like every World War II fiction has somebody walking away from the camera. I'm kind of wondering if that's kind of like, yes, you can tell what genre it is, but also mm-hmm. like what's going to be next. So I don't know.
I don't know. I'm curious. If anybody knows, let me know. I'd love to hop on that.
Oh, so what like from the behind the scenes of doing all this cover, what do you feel is like one of the most tedious or time consuming things in the cover process?
Well, for me, and it might just be, again, because I will always say I am untrained, it's just like finding the correct assets to use. So whether that be a typography that I want to use and tweak, whether that is an effect or something, or whether that's like images that I use to combine, because a lot of the times, and again, I'm not going to speak for every designer, because I know we all do things differently and I might do them backwards, but I use like different stock sites for assets. And so, oh man, there's just hundreds of thousands of images, just probably millions of images. And now, especially with like AI and everything, I'm trying to be really discerning about like, I, you know, try not to use AI unless it's something that my client is interested in or whatnot. And I mean, that's a hot button topic, so I won't even go there. But I will say that, I'm not even going to go there.
It's so new to everybody. It's like, maybe we just wait till the water ripples down and figure out how to actually use it.
Agreed. I have thoughts, but it's probably best to share them on like a personal basis, because I don't want people to misinterpret what I might say. But I will say that like searching for those images is probably just what takes the longest, because a lot of the times I have a vision in my head. And I am artistic, but I am not to the point where I could illustrate what I want to see. And so, I mean, and a lot of my covers are not illustrated anyways. It's more of like photo images or things like that. And so it's finding a scene that I can tweak to what I want it to be, basically. Yeah. So as an example, I just finished Chromatic, which is the third, the color theory series by Ashley Bustamante. Vivid is the first one, which is probably most people have been like, oh, I saw that cover. And then Radiant, and then Chromatic is the third one. And that was hard because you're on a book three and there's a specific style that I created from the first book that has to flow with the author's help. Actually, she helped me tweak the colors because she was like, I see it a little differently. So always props to the authors, because I get a lot of excellent input from them. But by the third book, you're just trying to think, okay, what can I do that stays true to this series, but is also unique and all these things. Yeah. And it just took me a long time to find it. And as this might be too deep for everybody, but you've got a photo image of someone who's like taken a photo of something, and then you've got 3D art, and then you have, you know, a vector art, which is like more flat of a design. And then you've got like, just different styles within all of those things. And so I was going for an illustrated feel, but in a specific way. So it's like this thing, and they all have to line up. I'm sure that there's people who know how to search for them better than I do, but I'm so visual. I need to do the process of looking.
Yeah.
I need to look through each one. I need to, you know, imagine, is this what I see? And then, I mean, I don't think you'd be able to tell from the assets that I pulled for the whole cover, because there's like, I don't even know, probably over 10 or something that make up the entire cover. You wouldn't notice them, hopefully, individually. So yeah, that's, for me, that's definitely the longest.
Wow. That's intense. I was thinking, formatting.
Yeah. You know, it's fun. Like the rest of it, I mean, it takes time for sure. Yeah, it takes time. And it depends on the complexity of the color, a cover. I know Secrets in the Mist took probably from, like, if I was to sit down and just from when I sat down and did it, not including the search for the images, it probably took me about like 8 hours or more. But that's because it's very detailed. There's like these little houses. Sure. I wanted on these floating islands and all these little things and getting the right layers and stuff. So but I think it's the finding those first that takes the longest. Maybe it's because the rest of it's fun. I don't know. Like it doesn't feel as hard.
It doesn't. Yeah. Well, that's good. So let's talk about Suspended in the Stars. Mm-hmm. I remember you blogged about it first. What inspired this story?
That's a great question. I remember specifically, I was living in Ohio at the time. Long story short, I broke up with a guy and I was living there for probably about 9 months, alone. I mean, I was living alone before, sorry, not with a guy, but I was so alone because we were no longer dating, and I had my own little apartment and everything. And I had a great church and had a great community there, but I was just really alone a lot of the time. And I love to hike. I love to get outdoors. So I did a lot of that. And on one of those hikes, I was listening to my electronic dance music, which always pumps me up and always makes me think of space. And I started with the idea of, and I don't even know if this will ever come out in one of the books or if it was just what I needed to get me to what the actual idea was. But it was, I thought, what if there was a circus in space, but a guy joined it in order to kind of be undercover in a sense. But then it turns out that the girl was also undercover, you know, this kind of thing, this kind of mixture of things. And I just like this idea wouldn't let me go. Cause I kept on thinking like, oh, you can have all of these, a circus, you can have all of these different like, species in a sense. I don't know if they're all human and they've adapted to like different things or if it's just they're from a different planet. I don't know. I probably should figure that out, but I did know that they were different than
different
humans.
Yeah.
Different abilities and things like that. So that was back, I don't even know the date when that happened. And then fast forward to 2020 when my friend Kristen Crum and I decided to blog a book on our blogs for a month. Mm-hmm. And that story came back to me as what I wanted to do. But I thought, well, what if I just did the prequel to that book? It became the book. So it was no longer, I was like, I can't see that other story anymore. And that's okay. I think I've cannibalized it enough into what Suspended in the Stars came to that I was like, that's okay. I got the heart of what I wanted there. And that's how ideas change, right? Like, that's
good.
But so I wrote the first about 50,000 words and then ended up, because I knew I was going to be writing it in a month, I wrote out the entire plot and I thought that I would be done with the book. So I thought that end mark would be the end and then I'd maybe just go back in and fill it in. But it really was only like halfway through. So I had to do some shifting. I've kept it pretty true to at least the first, probably third or so of the book. I mean, things really didn't change that much. So it's kind of like a weird, like my format is the whole first part of my book is an entire book. But I mean, you hit that midpoint in any book, and that's where you want to see change. And so from how I had ended it on the blog, I shifted that because I needed to. Because that I wanted to give people a happy-ish ending, you know, while they'd stuck with me for the entire month to see what had happened, but I also wanted to leave it open. And so I took some liberties there and shifted things so that I could finish the rest of the story. And it became Suspended in the Stars or the full version.
I know, and I love it that you have two covers too. And but I'm kind of like, oh my goodness, I
I'm
don't know which one I
extra.
like more too. Like that is like really cool. So, and with this, okay, so within this setting, when you're talking about a circus and state, what was a challenge? What was one of the biggest challenge of writing that kind of setting? Like what laws did you have to make up that worked?
That's yeah. So I'm a big Star Trek fan. Like I love Star Wars, but I grew up as a Trekkie hardcore. The Next Generation is like it's probably my all-time favorite of TV shows and you know sci-fi. And so with that, I say probably a lot of my science fiction feels like Star Trek in the sense of you've got these big sprawling ships where gravity is not an issue, and you know, you get to go to different worlds. You could travel at warp speed or whatever. I don't really use warp speed, but that kind of was I wanted to recreate that in my own way, I guess you could say. And so I always imagined when I'm a very visual writer, and so I have to be able to see what I'm writing. And I've always imagined the kind of the auditorium of the circus itself, which is the phenomena, is just this big, I don't, it'd be glass, but whatever, I call it something different, opening at the top that just as all of the stars, basically. So, you know, you've got this circular theater where it's just dark, and above it is this like basically blanket of stars kind of as your setting. And so when I saw that, I was just like, I just know. I don't get too hung up. It's not a hard sci-fi, so I don't get too hung up on, is this possible in space? It is now, like, you know, that type of thing. I don't worry too much about those type of details, mostly because I just imagine that the technology is sufficient to make it happen.
That's great. That, yeah, no, it's like just even how you're describing it, like I'm picturing it's like that's just such a cool mental visual piece that it's like, yeah, that's really cool. And I like it that you're saying how, like, okay, I am a sci-fi softie, like I have not done much, but so when I went into like Ronnie Kendig's was the first sci-fi that I ever read, and I was amazed, like, oh my goodness, I can visualize it, even though she doesn't have like too much detail. Like, I don't know. There's it's a hard way. It's like, okay, I can visualize it even without extensive detail about how it works. What do you feel like is like kind of the balance between like that kind of world building and then the storytelling? How
Oh,
do you
for
feel? How do
sure.
you work that out?
So I would say it's a great question. I'm like, how do I phrase this? How do I get what's in my brain out? I would say that for me, so I have read some hard sci-fi and I actually really enjoy it, which I didn't think that I would because it's a lot of math and I'm not mathy and a lot of detail. But what I realized is that the hard sci-fi that I've enjoyed, it's the writer. The writer can make it part of the story. And so for me, pretty much as long as the story is good, I will, you know, entertain a book no matter what category it's in. So I was thinking, I know that science fiction is a hard sell in general. And that's really what I faced with trying to pitch out Suspended in the Stars to the general market is just like, I'm an unknown author. And it's also a very difficult category to publish in. But what I tell readers is that if it to me, hopefully, reads a little more like fantasy. The difference being your setting is in space, so you have some technology, definitely. That's one of my favorite things is creating things that like I just would want to have, like a suit that air conditions you. yes, please. You know, and it makes everybody look good or whatever. No, yeah. It's just like those type of details that make our lives easier. And then trying to incorporate them in the world in a way that makes sense. So it's not overly explained. Like, I don't explain how the suit is able to adjust your temperature. I just explain that it does. And I'm sure that for the hard sci-fi people, that's not enough. Like, come on, give me the science. But that's not really who I'm marketing to. That's not my reader. I want people who love young adult fantasy to be able to pick it up and still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, if you think about it, like Star Wars is completely science fantasy. I mean, they have the Force, like, you know, like show me the science behind the Force, right? and with Ronnie's book especially, I got that Star Wars vibe too. You know, you're going to different worlds and every world has its own culture. And within that culture, it kind of feels more like fantasy, right?
Well, there are like, some levels where it's like, it is like it's bridging that gap kind of.
Exactly. And so to me, I guess to finally answer your question, I would just say that I try to make my writing descriptive, but not bogged down with description. If I'm able to see it, then I need to be able to describe what I'm seeing, but in a way that you would do in any writing, right? If in a romance, well, you need to describe the cafe that they're sitting at, the scents that they might smell, those type of things. So I did create, as an example, like the runner to Tally smells like dusk mint, and it's just something I created. And I mean, obviously we all know what mint is. Who knows what dusk scent, you know, smells like, but I create some kind of like unique things that aren't our world. And it adds this element of addition, I guess, where you know you're in a different world, but at the same time, you kind of get the idea. Your brain fills it in. So
people's imagination, they can catch up.
Yeah, that's the plan. But and also to have other readers too, right? To have readers who are reading it to be like, I can't really see this. I don't understand this. My editor helps with that too. So that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah. So what do you feel like somebody who has not read science fiction or space enough, like, do you feel like there's enough about like characters are characters, right? Like they could pick this book up and not be like, oh my goodness, there's so much technology that I need to keep up with. Like,
I would say, and what I've seen from some early readers and, you know, my endorsers as well, is just that the characters, I don't know that I set out to write a character-driven story because I really love like action necessarily, like more so than characters sometimes. But I've been hearing from people that it is very character-driven, but also hopefully action-y too. And so I think you can grasp those characters, and the setting is not going to feel so. It's going to feel foreign, but any fantasy does. I think when you first start it, so I would say, if you enjoy fantasy, chances are you might like this. And I've heard from so many people, I am not a sci-fi reader, but I loved this. So I'd say try it. Of course I would, right?
I'm definitely excited to try it. Cause I was like, I remember when you closed it out of the blog, I'm like, oh, I missed it. But then it's like, okay, I got another chance.
You'll get the whole story this time too. It's probably better that way. And it'll be edited too.
I guess. So we're talking about the characters in this story. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like it is about the characters that readers will like enjoy the most?
I do love the playful banter between my hero Renner and Tally. So Tally is the female main character, and she is the soaring starress in the phenomena. And then Renner is a soldier on the run for certain reasons. And I think between the two of them, there is just a lot of, I had someone recently tell me it feels a little like Tangled too. Tally is different, but like Renner is very much a Flynn Rider character. Like, and I didn't set out to do that, but I was like, oh yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, you're definitely selling on me.
Yeah. Well, and then also there's a few other characters who are added in. So I think the, maybe one of my strengths, I don't know. It's hard to say that when you're your own writer. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But I love a good cast. I like the background of people to matter and to have stories. Mm-hmm. And so especially in the circus. You've got a lot of great characters who do a lot of really cool things. And I really loved that. But then later on in the book, I bring in another character who will transfer to the next story. He's a lot of fun too. And they just all, I don't know, I love them all. So maybe it's not right to ask me, but I think the playful banter is fun. The romance is good as well, but I try to keep it very sweet. So it's sizzling, but nothing, you know, I wouldn't say a 14-year-old couldn't read, as long as their parents agreed, that type of thing. Yeah. So,
and this is, are you talking like you're going to be, is it going to be a series?
It is a series. Yes. There are two more books.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. That is exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the genre mashup. Like, I feel like that's so circus in space. Like,
yeah. And it will change for the second one. I'm realizing that each story, like, and I hate to not have the circus necessarily be as present, but there's the cat. But I just see the progression that has to happen for a series, a trilogy, especially. There's a lot of world building I need to do beyond the scope of just what we saw in the first book. So I'll give your listeners a little sneak peek. And I mean, this could still change because I'm writing it next month. But, but right now I'm saying that book two is a little like Doctor Who meets a gender bent Aladdin, kind of. I mean, it's still going to feel like Star Wars. It's still going to have some stuff too. But
no, I love that. It's like,
there's some interesting things that people are probably not going to see coming. Maybe because I don't know that they're coming yet. No.
But so you're looking forward to finding out what you're going to write.
Exactly. I mean, I've got ideas, but we'll see.
Yeah. No, that's neat. That is really cool. Gender-bent Aladdin. Interesting. No, I love the creativity of, like, I just recently like reread a retelling of like a fable fairy tale that I had never heard of until this year. And it's just like so unique. It's like, yes, I enjoy, you know, the common fairy tale that everybody knows.
Right.
But it's fun to find like those little, the mashups that just bring something, they're familiar stories, but it brings something new. And it's,
well, and I think with any good retelling, you're going to have the essence of that fairy tale or whatever it might be, but you're also going to do it in your own way. And I think that that's where we can see so many, as an example, Beauty and the Beast retellings.
Yeah.
It's because each author brings something so new to it that it just makes it alive and different.
Yeah.
So I think that when I say gender-bent Aladdin, I think too that people might start to get ideas, but I'm like, it's just a hint of it. So
but that's one that's not retold too much too. Like
it isn't. So it'll be interesting to see, but I'm excited.
And maybe there'll be something that pops up that you didn't even realize.
Yeah. Oh, that's totally possible.
Oh, so do you think that you have a favorite character in Suspended in the Stars, or there's just too many?
You know, I'd probably have to say Renner. He is just so fun. Yeah, there's a bit of an obsession with muffins going on there. And so anybody who's read it, they start to talk a lot about the muffins, which I think is so fun. And as a side note, I had two wonderful editors, and my second editor, who is my proofreader as well, suggested taking out a certain phrase. And I just knew, I had this feeling. I was like, no, it needs to stay in there. And I know, like, I know what her heart was behind it. She explained to me why she thought I should take it out. And he uses a phrase, sweet muffins, like sweet muffins. That was bad or whatever. And I just love it. And so I decided to keep it. And that, like, so many people have been like, I love that line. So you have to go with your gut, right? And it was nothing against the editor. She did a great job. Yeah. But I think you have to know your audience in that too. Yep. So that was really fun. So yeah, he's probably my favorite.
That is cool. I know, like those little little quotes and those things that it's like that character says or does. It's so cool to see that, because it's like, it's so, it couldn't be just cookie cuttered onto a different character. It has to be that character, right?
Exactly.
So can you share a favorite quote of yours from the book?
I can. I actually have two.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one is Renner's mom says this to him. And it's bravery will always win. And I think that that's something that, you know, he comes in as a very strong character. I mean, he's a soldier, so he has that background as well, but he's also just a very loyal person. And I love like seeing kind of like that softness. And it's just in a, I think it's in a, like a memory, like a flashback for him in a sense that he remembers that, but that's something that he's carried with him. But then also because of Renner's character and me loving him so much, I love his quote where he says, "Peace is not something you wait for, it's something you fight for." And I, it could sound a little like, oh, you know, like, oh, do we fight for peace? You know, but, and obviously there's nuances there. But in this world, especially, as there are some things going on in the background, he believes that it's better to fight for what you see as the final outcome versus sitting back and waiting. Which, you know, I didn't set out to like write a message necessarily into Suspended in the Stars. It's kind of whatever comes out through the writing. But that's something I love about him is discovering that. And then Tali is really just discovering kind of who she's meant to be because she's lived an interesting life. And if I say more, I'll spoil it. So I won't
Okay.
say anything else. But
So it needs to be read. I love that about the piece because it's like I didn't think of it on so much like a global thing, but even like in your life, in some cases, if you want something to change, or sometimes you do have to do stuff. You know, there has to be action taken in order to get where you want to be.
Oh, I love
So
that. I love that. I'm gonna use that.
that's how I interpreted it, you
No,
know, and
that's so
that's
true though. It's so true. Cause I think oftentimes you just think, oh, well, to have that peaceful, restful existence or whatever, it just, we just have to let it happen. But a lot of the times it's, I know for myself at least, it's, well, I've filled my plate a little too full. So I, you know, I need to wrestle with myself in what I say yes to, that type of thing.
Oh,
So
yes,
I
I
like
agree.
that.
That's good. No, I love it. And then so you're writing the next book that it's for a NaNoWriMo. You're gonna do that?
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and nano it. Just because it's, I want to get it written. My plan is to do the second Kickstarter in March again, 2024. So it'll be about a year for each. And then I'm also considering, I don't know if I'll do it next year, but I have another series that I've started. The first book is written, and it's a time travel, World War II and present day. And I'm considering kickstarting it as well, just because it's literally been sitting on my hard drive. I submitted it out, but it's a bit too much of just a romance for Enclave, which is fine. And it has a bit more of a message in it. So I don't know. I really want to publish it because mostly because I want to get to the next two books. Because it's a consecutive kind of, it changes the time periods that are for each book. So yeah, it's just something I'm like, I can't wait to write book two, but I can't do that until I publish book one. So
I love
yeah.
the idea of like I love time travel. That was the first fantasy element that I ever read, and I just love that ability. And I don't think I've ever read, well, I've read Annie Mateo's where somebody comes from World War II era, but that's like the only connection. Usually it's further back. So that's
So,
really
and it's
cool.
a little like, well, so I lived in DC for a couple of years, Washington, DC, and I set it there on the recommendation of Christy Cameron. So I always need to give her the props for that because I was going to put it in Ohio where there is some history there for a setting. She's like, no, Emily, put it in DC. So it's like, okay. And she was right. She was totally right. So yeah, so it's fun because there's a bit of, I call it a time travel dual time because he comes forward, but they also go back at one point. So it's, yeah, it's kind of fun. It's not as like crazy time warpy as some time travels because I don't know that my brain can handle it, but there is some interesting stuff going on there and a secret society and all those things.
Ooh.
So yeah,
Sounds very interesting. Okay. Yeah.
yeah,
And you're
so.
also one of the first, I feel like you're the first author that I've seen that has done that Kickstarter thing. How was that to use?
It was
To come onto it.
awesome. My friend CJ Malacey, she was the one. So I designed her covers and I went through like kind of the whole first Kickstarter with her the year before, basically. And I saw what she did and how she did it. And I was just like so impressed by all the success that she had and, you know, just kind of how she used it to tell her story and to fund her story. And so when it came to Suspended in the Stars, we had pitched it out to General Market. We got great feedback, but no bites just because it is, like I said, such a hard sell. And so my agent had done basically what she could with it. So it kind of reverts, not that it was hers, but it reverts back to me to do what I want with it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a Kickstarter. And I love, obviously, like I love the design stuff. I love the swag. And while not, you don't need all of that for a successful Kickstarter, I just knew that I wanted to do it because I enjoy it. So it went really well. I was surprised when we raised over $10,000 for just like a book one. I was like really floored. People were so gracious. And we actually, today I am taking all of the rest of the books to the post office and it will be fulfilled except for my audiobook, which is still in production. But yeah, it's been unbelievable. And to have to be able to produce such a good quality of book. And I, yes, hopefully the inside matches the outside, but I was able to go through a printer who, you know, you can do stamped covers and I've got a beautiful dust jacket and the book itself just feels so quality, as well as the paperbacks as well. And so to have that to me is like almost more worth it because you can get, you know, the quality from Ingram Spark and from Amazon is okay, but these are like professional, really nice. So I'm like, kind of, that's what I want, which is what kind of pushed me to that, which is also why I have so many covers for it because I wanted to keep it limited edition for the Kickstarter. So I know it's complicated. I'm sorry. But
no, I love it. No, I think it's just, it's like a visual feast. I feel like each one and it's like, I even love like your beginning one. And then it's like, and then you release the one with both main characters. Right. I'm like, is that so visually? And then I'm like, oh, but I also love the hardcover.
I know. Oh man. It's been fun, but I didn't realize like how much work I was putting on myself, especially when like I am acting as my publisher and my, you know, marketer and my PR and my, you know, all those things. And so kind of deciding the direction that I wanted to go in for the hardcover was really challenging, actually. I'm someone who puts off things if I feel like uncertain about them. And so I waited too long to design it because I knew it was going to be like emotionally difficult because it's just like, how do I top this first cover? And how do I find something that matches, you know, all of that. But now I have the format and that's really kind of one of the hardest things. So it will look different for each book, but the idea will be similar, which is nice.
That is really, really cool. I love that. So where can listeners follow you, keep up to date? Where can they find you?
So I'm most active on my Instagram, which is all one word or well, all words together, create, explore, read. And that's kind of like my YA focus. You'll see all Suspended in the Stars on that. And then my design website and kind of my website for the EA Hendricks pen name is eahcreative.com. So that's kind of all there. And then on the side, if you enjoy romantic suspense or cozy mystery or sweet romance, emilyhaney.com is my other website and everything else fits under that. Yeah, there's other things, but
do you feel like you have to juggle multiple personalities
all the time? Really briefly, the reason for that is that I have two very different audiences. So my Emily Haney kind of area is like sweet romance, but it's all adult. It's all, you know, adult sweet romance, adult romantic suspense, cozy mystery, those things. And then my YA stuff is so just drastically different. I've thought about merging, but one, my agent doesn't want me to, and two, I just don't think it would work as well.
Yeah.
I think something would get lost in translation and I would be afraid of that kind of separation. The separation just works better, I guess.
Yeah. And especially, if you're talking about like different audiences, it makes sense.
It makes it complicated for me, but hopefully helpful for everybody else.
Oh, well, I love chatting with this. Thank you so much. You've given me so much to like think about, opened up whole doors of like, I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a super fun time.
My pleasure. Can't wait to go visit that circus in space.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I do. I love hearing how authors come up with stuff, balance it, all the different aspects of it. Emily was a great person to talk to. She's a great person to follow on all of her platforms. And I hope that you had a great time listening. And until next time, may your TBR be NME.